podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
So it's all for play for still?
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to For the Love of Pomegranate podcast. Kind of a breaking episode, I think, more so than anything else. We've got confirmation. We've got that dreaded confirmation that Diego Carlos has ruptured his Achilles tendon. Everything pointed towards that directly after the game. It just never looked good, and I know that the dreaded Instagram posts came out afterwards. This is my set on Instagram being a world of fakery, but obviously the Instagram post came out. He was there, he was relaxing, and he was obviously sitting down and stuff like that. He was on crutches. Buendia was wishing him well. Martinez was wishing him well. But look, this was never going to be a 6 to 8 week kind of a thing. And when something like that happens, and when even you start mentioning the Achilles tendon, even if it's only a partial rupture, you're talking six months minimum. So very unfortunate. Why can't we have nice things? Because I thought he had a really good game at the weekend. He got up for a couple of crosses in their own box. He was very unlucky in the first half, had a couple of headers from corners and stuff like that. And now we're in a position whereby potentially we're going to have to replace him, because three centre halves and Josh Feeney, with Courtney House looking like he's moving to Watford on loan, for me isn't enough. And what I want to do is I want to take some time, obviously, to lament the fact that Diego Carlos is injured. We will not see him until 2023. And that is a real kick in the nuts for Aston Villa Football Club. Big signing, or the person we've gone out and, you know, spent the most money on over the course of the season, over the course of the off season, 29 million, looking for a big year, potentially looking to move to the Premier League, to get into the World Cup squad, looking at Qatar, maybe looking at finally getting that international cap that he's so richly deserved based on his form and has never quite gotten. And now he's going to be on the sidelines for the next 6 to 8 months. Cruel, cruel blow. Whoever said sport wasn't even remotely fair, for somebody like Diego Carlos, who's come in, and lest we forget, he was one of our vice captains as well. That's somebody in the leadership room that we're going to be losing on the field as well. So there's multiple areas where Aston Villa are going to need to look for somebody to replace this guy, number one in the leadership capacity, and number two in the rotation, because realistically speaking, he was our number one centre half based on selection and based on the very, very small sample set that we have. So thoughts are with Diego Carlos. Hopefully his rehabilitation goes really well, and we will see him back alive and kicking ASAP, I suppose, but not too soon, because the Achilles is a dirty one. It's the worst tendon for me that you can do, because it's just that whole stability piece on the ankle, and let's get him right before we rush him back. But our minds will move quickly to I've seen a couple of comments there. He might never come back. Highly unlikely that he never plays a game of football again. The Achilles tendon can be repaired. You see big, massive men at 320 pounds, you know, big 6 foot 6, 6 foot 7 guys who have massive forces in the NFL doing their Achilles tendon and coming back to play the game again. Yes, I know that's a different piece with regards to running and turning, but you see a lot of, I do go to the NFL because this happens more commonly in that league, and players do come back to be still speed players if they're wide receivers, turning players if they're cornerbacks, and obviously the big hefty lads up front do come back. So I don't see any way that we don't see Diego Carlos, like, barring that we have some unbelievably bad surgery or mishaps or infections. And my mind cast my mind back to Libor Kozak, who continually kept on getting infection after his surgery. So barring anything like that, I think that he will continue his career, and this won't be a career ending injury for him. And based on, you know, people have done this before, medical science and so on like that, and just I would be very hopeful from that point of view. Okay, so what we're going to have to do, I think we're going to have to bring somebody in, because Josh Feeney, for all his talent and everything like that, is 17 years of age. And I wonder what way the club is going to go. So I'm broken this down into two parts. Today, I am going to be looking at some of the cheaper options, i.e. I'm actually going to be looking at some free agent options that are out there. It's something that I think it should be borne in mind. There are actually some pretty really good defenders out there in the free agent market, which for me is crazy, because there's at least two, and one that I've shown you guys previously, that we'll take a look at, because as I say, a free agent signing like this could be something that the club needs. This guy doesn't need to come in and start this week or next week or the week after. We're blessed that we can bring him in, bring in a left-sided centre half, bring him in and get him up to speed over a 2 or 3 week period, because we do have Konsa, we do have Chambers. That's barring that we don't have any injuries. That we can do that. We have, but I think it's important that Villa get somebody in now before the end of the transfer window, and don't wait until transfer deadline day, because the longer you wait, the more time you're wasting to embed him into the team here. So let's take a little look at some of the guys that I've highlighted here. Two of these guys you will have seen before with limited detail as I went through a previous free agent piece during the transfer window that I wanted to take a look at. So let's take a look at these guys again. So number one is John Brooks. John Brooks is centre half, USA international. He is 31 years of age. He's left-sided, and he is a free transfer. He is free after leaving Wolfsburg last season. Tons of minutes played in his career. 22,509 minutes played at centre half. Very experienced guy, a big brick of a man. 6'3", left-footed, plays as a left-footed centre half. Looking at some of his statistics here, he is he's a centre half. He's going to hold that middle ground. Is something he's going to do. Mobility wise, he's not the worst, but he's also not the best. But he's very, very good at fronting players up. He's played in Bundesliga, can be a pretty physical league at times. It's a slower league, yes. Granted, it is a slower league, but it can be a pretty physical league in there too. And I would have no doubt when we're bringing somebody in here that we would want to maybe look at and how they look in comparison to Diego Carlos. This guy, I think, has the stature, he's the build, he has the bulk, and he'd be somebody that would be able to come in there. He also has the balding head, or the baldy head that Diego Carlos had. I know Diego Carlos's head was shaved, but I don't know if people are into the aesthetics of how the centre half looks. This might be somebody for them. But last season he made 36 appearances, 34 starts, and 2 as a sub. So this isn't a guy who's on the way down. He's somebody who's looking for a new chapter in his life. And for me, I think he's always been perfectly made for the Premier League, from the point of view that he's able for that brute strength. He's able to defend corners. And as we can see there with his possession stats, he's nifty on the ground. He's pretty nifty on the ground as well. So he's somebody who can come in. Like, he's not going to be a world beater, you know, he's 31 years of age, but he's a solid, steady Eddie, somebody who can come in here. And I would see him as somebody who could definitely play in the Premier League. When we look at him here up against Tyrone Mings and Ezri Konsa, and I've done this in such a way whereby I'm going to look at him with regards to Tyrone Mings and Ezri Konsa. Haven't put Callum Chambers in here because the sample set in Callum Chambers is so low. I'm looking over a 365-day sample set. That's why I haven't got Callum Chambers in there. But so don't be wondering why that's the reason why he's not in there. But when we look at how he stacks up against some of our center of our defenders already, we can see here that tackles per 90, he would come out as the best defender that we have. Tackles one, interceptions per 90, once again, he's up there with Tyrone Mings. Pressures, he puts more pressures on the ball than our centre halves. Aerial duels, he comes up there at the same as Tyrone Mings, at a 65% aerial duel win rate. Same again with Mings as a block rate, with regards to block rate, he's there or thereabouts with regards to Mings. His progressive passes are much better than anybody else in our team. And we can see that there. So progressing the ball forward with the ball at his feet, he's very good at getting that ball forward. And also his pass success rate is up there with Ezri Konsa as well. With regards to a pass attempts, all this is the context regards to his passing ability and so on. A lot of people might look at it and say, yeah, but has he had an awful lot of passes over the course of the last 365 days? He's averaging 57.71 passes, which is quite outstanding, to be honest with you, because it means that he's way ahead of any of the players that we have on our team with regards to the amount of passes that they're averaging per game. So he can take that load. He can still stay accurate with his passing as well. So if we are looking to get that ball playing center half, while he's not going to be Virgil van Dijk, he's probably going to be, you know, somebody who's steady Eddie in all those areas and could come in, could complement Mings. He's very similar to Tyrone Mings as well here. So if we're playing, and I'm looking at somebody who's to play on the left hand side, considering we've got two right-sided defenders at the moment, that's not to say these two guys can't play together, but they are similar from that point of view. Now let's look at him in relation to Diego Carlos as well. So let's look at him in relation to Diego Carlos. Diego Carlos says, I've got some formatting errors on this. I do apologize. But the numbers are correct. So looking at his tackles, his tackle rate is better than Diego Carlos. You know, tackles won. There's a big drop off in the percentage of dribblers tackled against the Carlos and John Brooks. Probably more so to do with the fact that Spanish players, and these are Diego Carlos's numbers from Spain, Spanish players will attack through the middle more often than not. So you will find dribblers coming inside more in the Spanish league. That could be a reason as to why the percentage of dribblers tackled is lower for John Brooks as it is to Diego Carlos. I don't have that massive amount of insight at this moment in time. Diego Carlos, the dribble past statistic there is heavily in Diego Carlos's favor. And as we go down through here, we can see that passes blocked and interceptions are heavily in favor of John Brooks. Fouls committed, he doesn't really commit fouls at all, John Brooks. And when we look at his passing statistics, they're thereabouts, but they're not going to be to the same level as Diego Carlos. But when we look at the pass completion rate, he stacks up well. You know, there's only a couple of percent there in that. His progressive passes are much, much better. And his progressive pass distance, there is nothing in it. There's a cigarette paper in it between himself and Diego Carlos. So he's obviously going to be a replacement for this guy. If we could get him in and maybe a short-term deal, maybe a one-year deal or something like that, prove himself in the Premier League. I don't know if he wants that. Maybe he wants stability. Maybe he wants a bit of longevity, considering that he's in the twilight of his career. Well, 31 going on 32 years of age isn't really the twilight of his career. But you know what I'm saying here, that he's getting to the end of his big, big paydays from a contractual point of view. But maybe it's something we can look at from a John Brooks point, with John Brooks, and get him in here to see if this is something that can work for Aston Villa. But I would be looking at him. He's got tons of experience, tons of international experience, played at World Cups, and can do a job in one of Europe's top five leagues, arguably the third best league in Europe. And I know people will look at me in here and argue that Serie A and Bundesliga, but the Bundesliga only ever has one or two teams that can win it. But John Brooks has been thereabouts. Should I say, throughout the course of his career. Let's look at the next person. The next person is my personal favourite. He's absolutely brilliant. But once again, the dreaded injuries are going to be this person's issue. 22 years of age, just gone 23, coming up in 23 years of age. Or sorry, just gone 23 years of age. Dan Axel Zagadou. And who doesn't want a man by the name of Axel on their team? Free transfer as well after being let go by Dortmund. French under-21 international. He is a beast at 6'5", and he's a left-footed player. He does play very much that left side. He's played left back, he's played defensive midfielder, and he's played centre half over his career. Very much would have played a bit of left back over the course of the last 365 days, but the injuries have hampered this guy. This guy has had injuries, and that is probably something to bear in mind. But the upside, once again, we're bringing in somebody here that needs to be defender number four. So if we're looking at, we could look at the short-term option and bring in John Brooks and have him maybe on a one-year contract, maybe a two-year contract to replace Courtney House, to have him in here as an experienced head. Or we could bring this guy in and basically reach for the stars, because looking at his statistics, this guy is everything. This guy has absolutely everything to his game. You go and you watch clips of this guy prior to injury and post injury. This guy has athleticism coming out of his ears, but teams are very much afraid to push the button on the injury pieces, on the injury piece for this guy. So if we're replacing somebody that's just been injured with somebody who has an injury history, maybe that's something the club want to guard against. But once again, we get this guy in tomorrow, he signs a contract. Maybe we overpay him or whatever. I don't know. This guy has all the potential in the world. And we get him in here and give him 4 weeks to learn the way lay of the land. This guy could be still here in 5 years' time. He is an unbelievable talent, but as I say, the intangibles there with regards to injuries are a big worry for somebody who's so young. I'm just going to actually bring up his injury history here because just to take a look at it, because I meant to bring this up and have it here for you guys. Before I started, so just taking a look here at what he's done. So yeah, so he's he basically the whole lot of 2020 he had knee ligament issues were the big ones for him, and he broke his metatarsal. So they're the two biggest pieces here. It seems like he had a knee ligament injury in 1920 and 2021, which kind of kept him out for most of those two seasons. But he's young enough that maybe coming back from that is going to be something that he has done. And as I say, you know, with medical science now, cruciate ligament or medial ligament, or it doesn't say which one it is here, or anterior ligaments. Once again, they can be cured, specifically for somebody who's so young. And hey, we love a defender who's got dodgy knees around Villa Park. For me, I would be on the phone to this guy right now. I would have been on the phone to this guy Saturday afternoon, getting him in here, having a look at him, see what the story is, talking to him. He's absolutely brilliant. You might have to wait for tomorrow for that one, TKW. Sorry about that. This is part one. We're just going to look at free transfers today, and tomorrow we're going to look at some paid transfers then as well. But I love him as well. But for me, this guy, Dan Axel Zagadou, ticks all the boxes. For me, for a player with versatility. Now, we're going to talk here as well about small sample set, 23 years of age, only had 19 appearances last season, 12 starts, and that should be 7 subs there. As you can imagine, I've rushed distance finding out the news this morning about Diego Carlos. But the centre-back position here is somebody that needs experience. He's only played 5,900 minutes as a centre-half, and that's something that we need to look at. I suppose really as well that he's going to be that inexperienced guy, but what this guy could be in a year's time or 2 years' time, if I look at the longevity, he could certainly come in and do a job now if needed in spot locations if Tyrone Mings is injured or whatever. But this guy could be the successor to Tyrone Mings based on his potential prior to injury and post injury as well. And we can just see it there in his numbers, like his pass attempts. He's just a workhorse with the ball. His passing statistics are as good as you will see. You will not see anyone better with the ball at their feet. Like we talk about Virgil van Dijk as being this archetypal defender with the ball at his feet. Here we go. Here's the second coming. And I'm not being hyperbolic with that. I know that a lot of these stats are potentially padded from the fact that he's played out left back as well before. But if you can play left back at 6'5", if you can play left back at 6'5" and have an 89.2% pass completion rate, like that's freakish type of stuff, guys. That's freakish stuff to be that tall and that nimble and that have that ability to be able to play with the ball at your feet. That's fantastic. Richie Ryan, are we linked to this player? We're not linked with any of these players. These are options that I would use to replace Diego Carlos. We've actually been linked to one player who's coming up next that I will show you in a moment. But this guy, I cannot understand how he's not with a club. I just can't understand. It's mind-boggling. This guy was destined for the stars. He was shot out of a cannon until he had the knee ligament injuries. And I think the teams have just forgotten about him. That's the only thing I can think of, because there's no reason not to be pursuing this guy. Not that somebody hasn't taken a chance on him. And I, for one, on a free transfer, would be taking a chance on this guy. I think he's superb. Who is next? Oh, yeah. So that's what we're looking at here. Look, he just completely and utterly trumps our other centre halves at the moment. Obviously, as I say, there is a bit of padding here and statistics playing out at left back. But as I say, if you can do that at 6'5", you can do that. You can do that through the centre as well. And I want to see, is he good with the ball at his feet? The evidence is overwhelming that he's good at the ball. Good with the ball at his feet. He had more pass attempts. More pass attempts per 90 minutes last season than Boubacar Kamara did as a defensive midfielder. And this guy actually has been earmarked as potentially somebody who could move further up the field as well. And at 6'5", as I said, there's just too much upside in this guy not to give him a shot. If he doesn't pan out, what about it? Free transfer wages, that's fine. If he doesn't pan out, He's our fourth. He would be our fourth choice centre half. But to have him here, if we were to get 6-8 games out of him this season, and let's just say he doesn't pan out, that's fine. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. How somebody hasn't taken a chance on this guy is just beyond me. And I'd love to know. Answers on a postcard. If anybody knows more about this guy, if there's character issues or whatever that I haven't been able to find rifling through the internet, then please let me know, because this guy is like the seventh or the one of the biggest mysteries in the football world for me as to why somebody hasn't taken a chance on him. And I would prefer us to take a chance on somebody like this. But I don't know what way the club will go. Lastly, we have here his statistics up against Diego Carlos. We can see here his passing statistics far outweigh anything that Diego Carlos does. Well, sorry, not far outweigh. They far outweigh anything anybody does, to be honest with you. But they trump Diego Carlos' numbers here. And we can see here that he matches up favorably. He's had more tackles. He's had a higher percentage of dribblers tackled. He's never dribbled past, and he's had way more pressures than Diego Carlos. Once again, that is all probably from playing a bit left back last season as well to fit him into that Dortmund team. But this guy is really good. His aerial duel success rate, 76.6%. 6'5" guy who can play in the air. I'll take that all day long and twice on Sunday. So this guy is quite good in my book. If you haven't picked that up, I kind of like him. I think he's kind of good. All right, next one we're going to take a look at here is a man that is very, very, very used to the Premier League and used to English football in general. We were linked with him. Bear with me 2 seconds here now, and I will try and bring up. Who was it that linked him to us this morning? I know it was a spurious enough link, but still, links are links. I'm just trying to bring it up here. Where's my tweet machine gone to? I'll just move on to the next slide and we can see it here. Jason Denier, Belgian international, formerly of Lille, of Lyon. Now a free transfer. Right-footed, plays on the left side of defence. Remind you of anyone? Diego Carlos style. Last season, he had 20 appearances, 16 as a start and four as a substitute. Overall in his career, he's played 20,082 minutes. A lot of guys here will remember him. He came through the Man City Academy. Then went to Celtic. And played quite a few games in Celtic. Was also loaned out to Galatasaray. Played 3 years at Galatasaray, and then came back to play in the Premier League with Sunderland in 2016, 2017. So he's somebody who understands the league. He's played in the league, and he's gone on to have exploits and plaudits as a centre half for the Belgian national team as well. He spent the last how many years? He's been at Lille since 2018. And he's racked up the appearances there as well. And he was let go at the end of this season. I don't know why. Once again, if anybody has anything on why he would be let go. But looking at him here, he seems to fit the model of somebody that we potentially could want or could like. Comes in very, very similar to Tyrone Mings once again. If we're looking to keep somebody who can do the basics right, like Tyrone Mings can in certain instances, well, then this is the guy for us as well. His aerial success rate is poor. I'm going to say that. I've just been trumpeting a guy who's had brilliant aerial success rate. This guy's is poor. Comes in at 49.1%. And something that I think that the club would need to look at if that is going to be a deal breaker for him, maybe look into the reasons why that was low, specifically within the French league as well. But when we look at pressures, he stacks up well with Tyrone Mings. His interceptions stack up well. His tackles are almost identical. The amount of blocks are actually better than Tyrone Mings. And his progressive passes stack up very, very well with Tyrone Mings. So the only negative area he has is the aerial duels piece, which I think is something that we need and something that we should be looking at. Maybe it might be a deal breaker for this guy. His progressive passes and his passing attempts are far outweigh anybody else in the team. And we can see that there, that he has a very good pass success rate at 94.2%, which is right up there, as I say, 99th percentile. And the amount of work he gets through in a game is huge as well. 69.47 passes per 90 minutes as well. So he can pass the ball out. He's a ball player. Plays in the Belgian national team, so I wouldn't expect anything less of him from that point of view. He was linked to us by a guy by the name of Owen O'Brien, who's a freelance sports journalist. I don't know a whole pile about Owen O'Brien, But he says exclusively understands that it's an exclusive. He says that he understands Aston Villa are considering a move for free agent Jason Denier as an option following Diego Carlos's injury. Also told Aston Villa have discussed a potential deal for Arsenal's Rob Holding. Other options are also being considered. I know we're going to probably look at this and say all credibility lost when we're looking at Rob Holding. I'm just reporting. I'm just talking about what I've come across on the internet. And this guy ain't a bad shout on a free transfer. Once again, he's 27 years, or he's 20. He is, what's that? 20, yeah, 27 years of age. So he's not exactly ancient, and he has a ton of caps for Belgium. He's 35 caps for Belgium, and he has scored one goal for them as well. So somebody that can also play defensive midfielder as well in a push. So he might be one of those rehabilitation projects that, from a play standpoint, point of view, that Steven Gerrard wants to take a punt on, like he did with Callum Chambers last year. He's very mobile, should I say. Does have a bit of a rick in him. I think people might remember that from his Sunderland days. But, looking at the Premier League over the weekend, what, you show me a defender who doesn't have a rick in him, because there was some awful defending over the course of the Premier League this weekend as well. So maybe there's, as I said, that's not as big a thing on their radar as you would think. One thing for me here as well, he's 6 foot. I'm kind of the opinion that we might need to go a small bit taller in our centre half department. But look, I can't talk. I'm 5 foot high to a grasshopper, so it doesn't really matter from that point of view. But Jason Denier is somebody that we were linked to it, albeit spurious enough, and somebody I think that potentially could be a name on the list. You know, yeah. Look, we mightn't go sexy at this one, guys. Like, for people who are going to turn their nose up at somebody who's 35 caps for Belgium and 246 professional games as a fourth choice centre half. You know, we got to be really honest about this. We may not go big here. So throwing the toys out of the pram for, and this is me included, I'm coming to terms with this as well. That's why I'm looking at free transfers. That I'm not going to throw the toys out of the pram if we sign somebody. I'm going to see how it pans out, because realistically speaking, it might be, they mightn't be very, very heavily focused on over the course of the season. Hopefully we don't get any more injuries and we don't need to see them at all. So there are two ways of thinking of this. Do the club go in and get stability, or knowing that Diego Carlos will be back next season, I've no doubt that he will be back next season, and or do they go in, do they say, right, do we expedite our transfer policy, do we now bring in the guy that we wanted to maybe replace, say, on the right hand side, maybe replace somebody else that we were looking at. I see a couple of you guys mentioning there as well, with regards to Lacroix, who I will be talking about again tomorrow in further detail, and two other players that I think that Aston Villa may be interested, or I don't know whether they're interested in at all. They're just people I think would fit the team. No links to any of these guys just yet, bar Jason Denier. So I think it's going to be a body of work that's going to need to go into replacing Diego Carlos. It just depends what route they want to go down. Do they want to go and spend money and bring somebody in? Or do they want to go and take a chance maybe on a lower-end signing or a free transfer or something like that to steady the ship? But I think whatever they're going to do, I think they have to do it now. And I think I wouldn't be a fan of a deadline. I'm not going to say I wouldn't be a fan of a deadline day signing. When we sign him, it doesn't really matter. I think from a planning point of view, you get him in now so that he'll have 2 or 3 weeks to come up to speed while the transfer window is open. And if you bring in somebody on a free transfer like this, I think it's just a way of hedging your bets. I think it's a small bit better than going away and spending 30 or 40 million on somebody. So we'll see what way the club goes. So guys, that's going to do it. I think that's, we have how Denier stacks up against Diego Carlos. Better tackling dribblers, never dribble past, better blocks, better passes, passes blocked, better interceptions, commits less fouls, better passer of the ball than Diego Carlos. So when we put the two of them side by side, there ain't that much in the difference. in some areas, and then in other areas there are, I suppose. Look, when you look at the tackles per 90 and so on, you can say that there's a big difference there. Pressure success rate, there isn't much in between the two differences in the, between the two there, 1.7%. And we look at progressive passes, there is a big difference. There's nothing really between progressive pass distance and then the passes under pressure. There's what, one extra per game as well. So I wouldn't be throwing the baby out of the bathwater when we're discussing somebody like this who's traveled around leagues in Europe and is a bit Galatasaray, Celtic, Sunderland, Lyon on his and coming through the Anderlecht and Manchester City academies as well, also still being in the Belgian squad. He could be somebody that they look to. He could be somebody that they look to. And if he does, you guys will have got the scoop of him right here on For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast. And that's what we try and do. No, we don't. We just talk about players that we think might fit. Right, yo, guys, that's going to do it for me today. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Back again tomorrow with, I'll actually have two podcasts tomorrow. I'll have Diego Carlos part two. If you guys want to tune in for that, it'll be around this time, around 10 o'clock again tomorrow morning. Also, tomorrow evening, we'll be doing our voicemail podcast. Please, please go onto our Twitter and you'll be able to find the speakpipe.com website, speakpipe.com/ For the Love of Paul McGrath pod, and you'll be able to leave us a voicemail there. I'd love to hear what your guys' thoughts are via voicemail. If you pop it in there, I will play that live on a show. I will play it on a show. I will discuss it after we play it. But one thing I will say to you is, if you are leaving a voicemail, do not leave your email address. I will have to email you. I'll have to delete it and then email you back and say, can you please leave one without leaving your email address? So don't leave your email address for privacy purposes. I will be sharing everything on the screen and I don't want anybody's email addresses to be there because of, obviously, for privacy reasons. So please, 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 please do not leave your email address if you are leaving a voicemail. But leave a voicemail because we'd love to hear you from hear from you as well. We have been linked with a couple of other players as well. I will come back later on in the week with regards to those couple of attacking players. I'm just not so sure that they're actually real links, but we will take a look at those later. I'm more so concerned about our centre half position at the moment, and we will be looking at that over in the early part of this week. But thanks so much, everybody, for watching. Thanks a million for listening. Thanks a million for everything. Give us a thumbs up, and until tomorrow, all that's left to say is up the Villa.
Podcast Network.